First responders are the people rushing into a crisis when the rest of us are rushing away. They are there when criminals break the law, when a building is on fire, when somebody has been hurt or is extremely ill, or someone has fallen ill due to a pandemic. COVID-19 not only compromises health and takes lives, it also adds emotional and psychological stress to the women and men who respond to emergencies and crimes. Dr. Alan Holmes has been working with first responders for decades, providing them with training and strategies designed to improve their workplace and their work. Now, working with fire, police, and ambulance, he and the team at Iridium Medical have set up a support hotline for first responders looking for help in addressing the many questions they will face regarding their own well-being and that of their families and their colleagues in their departments. The hotline is via email. If you are a first responder and you have questions about your health and what you should do, the email address is covid19support@iridiamedical.com. We invited Dr. Alan Holmes of Iridium Medical to join us for a conversation that matters about the questions first responders have about COVID-19 and how to determine when they should or shouldn't go to work.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Dr. Alan Holmes, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for doing this remotely.
Well, I think that we all have to be responsible this time and lead by example that as much as possible, if we can conduct our business by staying out of direct human contact, that's what we should do. But there is a group of people, and these people you are responding to, they are first responders. They're rushing in when everybody else is rushing out, and they have a whole bunch of issues and concerns about their own well-being. Let's first of all talk about what you are doing to help first responders, what the helpline is that's available to them, and then let's get into a series of questions that they may have.
Thanks very much, Stuart. So I've been involved with assisting fire departments with a number of medical-related issues through myself and my group, Iridium Medical. And our goal really is to provide up-to-date information in practical operational terms of how they can respond to this emergency. And we've done this very similar for other emergencies in the past. And so I think that's one of the big keys for us is trying to keep people safe at work. And what we've done is working closely with all of the different groups, including the Fire Chiefs Association, to ensure that we're giving them the latest information and that we're all working off the same set of protocols. So at the highest level, that's one of the roles we're doing. And then with the support line is that there are some specific questions that first responders have as it relates to them themselves getting sick or having loved ones at home that may be sick, or questions around, when am I able to come back to work? When should I be staying home? So we're really trying to help provide those answers so that people can kind of keep moving forward as we all try to challenge against this very difficult time.
Well, there's a couple of different parts to your answer there. Number one is here are the most important things that you need to do to ensure your own well-being. Can we cover that just a little bit as a first responder? What do they need to do to be protecting their own health? And then we'll get into more about how that extends out through their team and then exponentially through everybody's network or families.
Yeah, so the first thing what we've been doing, we've been saying this to not only first responders, but anybody that now as part of their role needs to be still interacting with the public. And the first thing they need to do is when you get up in the morning as a first responder is do a self-check. The BC assessment guide that has the symptoms, you go through that to see, do I have a fever, a cough? Do I have a sore throat? Have I got a new onset of sneezing here? And if you do, and it's been very well, articulated by all of the chiefs and departments, that you stay home. And so there's no reason to start your day if you're feeling that way. There is enough capacity in the system currently that you can stay at home and make sure you get better. The second part in keeping yourself safe is that you when you get to the station or again detachment if with the police is that you do that again that self-check with your team to make sure that everybody's starting the day knowing that everybody around them in their own little ecosystem is all healthy and well, that nobody has one of these symptoms. And knowing that, you can start the day to say, again, we're starting at a good place. And then starting to institute all of the things to say, we got to change the way we do our shift reports. We got to change the way we actually eat lunch and interact as a group, a responder group, so that we're maintaining the physical distancing. And when do we need to break that 6-foot barrier? And when we do, we better have some checks and balances in place. And so many of the departments now, you're basically all functioning where people are really doing that 6-foot distance. Then the next thing is okay, we've got to go to a call. And so they've all looked at ways that they can reduce their chance of an exposure while they're on a call. And that starts right again from the assistance with BC Ambulance about notifying and do pre-call screening to make sure that does the patient have any COVID-like symptoms at all. And if they do, then there's a protocol in place around the PPE. If they don't, the crews are still need to double check. And so when they come into that room, they need to do their own scene assessment, and they need to make sure that the likelihood of a COVID patient, because people still fall downstairs, people still have heart attacks, people still have other kinds of conditions, and they need those critical interventions that the first responders can provide. So really screening out when you know that there's a likelihood of somebody with COVID. And then if there is a likelihood, it's again approaching that as like you would any type of scene where you're only sending in those people that need to be, those people that are properly, have the proper equipment and the personal protective equipment, and then having the procedures when they, what's called don and doff, or take the equipment on and off and decontaminate, that it's all done as part of a protocol. So using all of those links across the chain, then, realistically, we believe that first responders are doing the best they can to limit their opportunity to become infected.
Police officers and all these first responders must be asking themselves, well, what am I supposed to do and where do I go to get the kind of help that I need to be able to deal with those situations?
There's a lot of trepidation. And what we're trying to get the message out, and the first responders, using the PPE under their protocols are actually protected. And so we have to go with that premise that this virus, as we know it now, the majority, it's through droplet spread. For the most part. And so again, the precautions that many departments have are even above that. And so if people are wearing their proper PPE when they're in a risk potential situation, their chance of getting infected is very, very low. Because if there's no break from their PPE, there's no way it gets into their eyes or into their face, or nobody coughs on them. If they've got the ability to change and as they don and doff their protective equipment, they are now, in a nice way, insulated from that virus in that situation. And so what we really try to do is have, so that people can reduce their anxiety, is do that scene assessment. If there is any risk, then again, only send in if you don't need. If one person can handle it, only send one in. If you need the whole crew, send the whole crew in. So you're really just limiting exposure. And if you do have to walk into that situation, then make sure you're properly outfitted with your PPE. And an additional point is that it's clear from an ethical perspective that if somebody's got a life-threatening situation and you're like, oh my goodness, I don't know if I have time to put that PPE, the number one rule that we always use in this in first responders is you need to protect yourself first. And even if there is a short mm-hmm. delay, that you must stop and you must protect yourself, that's completely within the protocol. And there's no expectation that somebody goes and rushes into a scene. Again, fire does that every day. When it's a fire, they make sure they suit up, even though there may be somebody that could be potentially at risk in the building. They will go through their proper procedures, exactly what we're doing now, to make sure that they're safe whenever they can be.
Let's say you wind up in that situation where you now have been thrown into an environment where you're pretty confident that the person might be expressing some of the symptoms associated with COVID-19. Do you leave that scene wearing your clothing, or do you immediately, remove that clothing, sequester it into plastic bags or whatever, so that you reduce the amount of possible contact that you could have with anything that might have become contaminated?
You just gave the answer right there. Perfect. Oh. It's so again, you control the scene. And again, you make sure that when you come out of that, you've got an area that you're able to remove that, and then it's bagged. Whether depending on the local protocol or the local department, the bottom line is that there's a safe place that is taken as far as removed. It's bagged and it's made sure that again any of those things are not then cross contaminating anything else.
So for first responders, you've set up a hotline.
It's an email-based system. What we've done is we've realized that, those momentary things about, oh, I've been exposed or a scene is unsafe, that's really at an operational level. So now that, the protocols are in place that they can diffuse a situation where somebody potentially has had an exposure or a break in PPE. With the virus, because of the way of its nature, it's not like you immediately become sick within minutes. The virus has to replicate in your system, and so we have the benefit of of a little bit of time to really gather the information to make sure we're giving you the right response. And so what we've done is we've set up a system that, again, when there's a concern around exposure, or again, if they're feeling ill, what do they do? Or can I come back to work because I've got a bit of a cough? Can I, I've got somebody sick at home. What do I do? Am I going to infect them? We've created a system by which people can send to us. We have a team that triages that, and then we link in whoever their duty supervisor or member of their team, their chief, so that we all can talk about what happened and what's the best thing for the department. So that, again, we're providing that information very similar to what public health is doing. We're using the same guidelines, but we're just putting an operational overlay for the fire department. So we're really trying to not answer the question in the first very moment, but now somebody's, the scene has now been, safe, the patient's been managed. Now we're dealing with, okay, what if? So it's really those questions that remain in some of those calls. And when somebody does get ill with symptoms, that we can get them some response about, okay, here's what potentially happens. And here's the next things to do so that we can reassure them that they're doing everything along the right way.
I can imagine one of the questions that comes up is a first responder says, okay, it turns out I got exposed. What do I do? Do I go home? Or now that I'm home, what do I do? Do I stay here? Do I isolate from my family? Do I stay away from my responsibilities at work, even though I know that I'm needed? I don't want to go around infecting anybody else. It must be a very confusing moment as to what exactly is the right thing to do.
You're right. And so I think what we have to do is go back to basic principles. If you showed up at work, everybody was healthy and safe in your crew, you didn't get it from your crew. If you did everything right, you went on the calls, you did your PPE, and again, you minimized your exposure. At the end of that shift, what we want to have people go home to say is, it's safe for me to go home to my family. And so again, with the clothing and how if you've been like you've had any day of work, depending on everybody's own kind of personal habits. But again, it's being mindful of when you get home, what is your personal hygiene routine, and you're good. Like you've washed, you're clean, and so the virus, if there is any, is not jumping from your body onto anybody. And so we really want to try to remind people that again, if you don't have a break in PPE. Then you're fine. And all those other things that I said, you're doing social distancing, hand washing, and all the rest of it. So that's the biggest majority of trying to just remind people that you're doing the right thing, keep on that course. And then we run into a case, we think somebody was a COVID positive patient. So that's, I think, one of the questions. Well, because of the way the system works, that patient who was ill at day one, that the first responders went, they thought they were using their PPE, they thought everything was good. And then they go to the hospital, they get a test. It takes a little while for the turnaround test. So in fact, what we're getting is a response at maybe 5 or 6 days from when they saw that patient. So it's not an instant response. And so, okay, we realized we had a COVID positive patient 7 days ago or 6 days ago. And now it's like, okay, what do we need to be doing? And because everybody is self-monitoring and doing everything they need to do at home, which is, minimizing the people in and out of their home, protecting their own ecosystem, at this point, it's like, well, we're just going to carry on and continue to self-monitor.
What happens, though, if a first responder says, okay, a member of my family is now positively diagnosed with COVID-19. Does that same protocol exist that you say, well, I'm not showing those symptoms and therefore I can, because I'm still following proper protocols, I can still come to work? Or is the level of risk elevated and do I stay home?
Great question. A lot of the members have young families. Young families, kids get sick with an earache, they get a cold, they get a cough, they get runny noses, and then it kind of goes around the family. Is that COVID? Is it not? Again, we don't have an instant test. We know that this is cold and flu season. So what we again run into is, okay, somebody at home is sick, and are they, and in order again, although it would be nice to do an instant test, we don't have an instant test. So Knowing that, we just carry on to say, okay, what do? We make sure our own ecosystems at home is that if you've got a sick child and you're a first responder, then, you know, is there an opportunity for, you know, your partner to be a little bit more in the primary health care? So you're protecting yourself so you're not getting sick so you can still go to work. And many of these families have done some very innovative things in sacrificing, you know, that contact just to try to keep people going. And then you look at it as an individual capacity. So if a department has the capacity because they don't have a huge shortage of staff, then we can be really conservative and say, listen, your partner's got a high fever and they've got a cough and they've got all these symptoms. You know what? Let's have a conversation about, okay, what was your personal situation? How close were you? How much time? When did they get sick? And then in a sense, we do a risk stratification to say, great, if we have to, we can keep you at home for 14 days to self-isolate as the public health says you should. But if we start running into operational capacity issues, and this happens in other parts of healthcare, is that we may have to bring you back at, you know, sooner than that. So that if you haven't got sick in the first maybe 5 days or 6 days, 7 days, then maybe that's the time we can bring you back when the other option is that we're running short on crews.
Well, and thus this email tool becomes all the more important because they get to speak directly to healthcare providers and then their own team and supervisors to help arrive at what would be the appropriate decision.
And that's really why we built the system that way, is so that we don't want to make an individual choice in isolation to where the department is. If the department's at critical staffing levels, okay, we need to now look at all those people that have just come back from a foreign country and they're 10 days into their self-isolation. They came from a low-risk place that had very few cases. So I'm not trying to overcomplicate it, but you basically put all of the people, if you've got 20% of your people off work, then you put them into one big pot and you say, okay, out of that pot, who would be the best person to bring back first?
So how do first responders access the service and what would be the steps that they would take? It sounds to me like it's a simple email, but it's about having the right email address, which we're going to put up and run throughout the whole broadcast here. How do they access it?
And so there's a form that we've distributed through all the fire chiefs, the Fire Chiefs Association of BC, through the police departments as well. And again, it's a form that just asks a few simple questions. We don't want detailed medical history. We just want to know what's related to COVID that we can help you with. Is this a question that I've got some symptoms? When can I return to work? I'm worried that I got exposed. Is there anything else I need to do? I've got a pregnant wife in some cases, or a partner with some health conditions. Is there anything special I need to do? And I think what we're really trying to do is just reassure them so that we can take one small amount of anxiety and maybe reduce it a little bit. So
there are other groups of people who are at work right now because they've been deemed essential. Pharmacists, grocery store clerks, and people who stock the shelves and so on. They might be watching this saying, well, what about me?
The message really is very similar, is what's your current, we use the term ecosystem. So when you wake up in the morning doing the same thing, am I okay to go to work when I get to work? Is everybody else on my team? And then why do I need to be within 6 feet of anybody? And if I don't need to be in 6 feet of anybody, then I don't need to go there. If I do need to be within 6 feet of somebody for whatever this is, then what can I do to minimize these risks?
And that all makes sense. And so if I were somebody who was deemed essential and I was looking at the protocols that we talked about right now for first responders, I would be going, okay, I get it. One thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, now first responders are used to wearing rubber gloves. For people who are not in that environment, what's the recommendation on how long you should wear a pair of rubber gloves before you change them?
If you wear gloves and you touch surfaces and then you touch your face, you're still doing the same thing, right? So So, you know, okay. Love its own without kind of putting it in the rest of it would be, no, you know, it still is a way that you can conduct this if you still touch your face.
Well, you see, you answered my question because I see so many people in grocery stores, for instance, who are clerks who are wearing gloves now. And I'm going, okay, yeah. Well, what does the glove do if you're not changing it after every customer? And you right. pointed out, you know, personal hygiene is what is most important and not touching your face.
Yeah. So the goal is that, you know, before you touch your face every time and you've got gloves on, you need to take those, like you need to wash your hands and then you can touch your face. So you can see one person, two people or three, but at any point, if you touch your face, you've actually reduced, you know, you basically, you know, reduce the efficiency or the efficacy of having those gloves.
Right. Because they can still be a transmitting surface. Yeah.
Yeah. And what people need to know that it does not actually go through your skin.
No.
The virus does not, it only goes through your mucous membrane. So it goes through in your mouth and your eyes. And that's this whole concept. So if I do this and I touch the surface of my computer or of a desk and I just hold my hands like this and then I go wash them and I never touch my face, I will not get infected that way. The way I do this is I touch the surface and then before I go wash my hands, I'm up into my face. That's how you transfer it. So it doesn't, a lot of people, again, some of the simpler concepts, but it's hard because you're just thinking in a different way, is that it does not go through your skin. And the way it gets is through your mucous membranes, which is in your mouth, in your eyes. And that's why you hear it. And people sometimes don't understand why they're always having to wash their hands, because that doesn't sound, but it's for exactly that reason. You pick it up on your hands and now your hands are your carrier. And now before you get and touch your face, you better wash your hands. And that's the same thing when people say about the surgical masks, the little paper masks. When people say, oh, maybe I should wear those. And so one of the big problems is if you don't wash your hands diligently before and after, you've just done the same thing. You've touched what is potentially infected, and now you, again, you've reduced why you're wearing the mask. So sometimes those concepts, you know, they sound like, well, it makes logical sense that you wear a mask out in public, but if you don't use the hand hygiene component with it, you're really reducing the how well it'll work.
That's very important information, especially for people who are new to being in this environment of being frontline in this fight against COVID-19. Dr. Holmes, thank you very much for joining us for this informative and important segment of Conversations That Matter. I look forward to having another conversation with you in the future.